they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome down the Security Rabbit Hole to yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Great winter episode for you as we say goodbye and hopefully good riddance to 2020. Although, sweet mother of mercy, what's in store for us for 2021? I can only imagine. Please bring it back to normal. James, we're wearing hoodies. It's getting cold.
It is. It's chilly this morning. I think it was 46 when I got up this morning, which, you know, that may not sound that bad, but for Florida, that's chilly.
That's like double parka weather. Yeah, I mean, I woke up and it was 42. We've got an overnight freeze warning here in Atlanta, and that's like, oh God, what the heck? People are gonna freak out. But it's cold out there, but it's hot on the mic. So we've got an awesome guest. Interesting topic for those of you in the Intel world and in cybersecurity in general. I'll let him introduce himself. And Kareem Hijazi, how are you?
I'm great. Good to have you here. All right. How's it going?
Good. So tell us a little about you and where you're from and what you do, and then we'll dive into the topic.
Sure. So my name's Kareem Hijazi. I am presently the founder and CEO of a company called Prevalion, which is a interesting brainchild of mine that sort of vaguely spun out of my experiences in the sort of 2010 and 11 timeframe when I built another company back then, which we can get into. But in short, what I do with Prevalion and what we do collectively is we pursue adversary infrastructure, so the command and control environments of these groups, and we basically gain their perspective on who they're victimizing, and then deliver that information back either to the victims directly or, even more importantly, to organizations that are working with contagious groups that are infected. So think of it kind of if you're a, what's it called, Walking Dead fan, you know, we're looking for zombies to protect humans.
So that is super interesting because, and I think this is relevant to the listeners of this podcast anyway, because I know I've got a lot of folks in the intel and that play in the defense of companies, and you're looking at it completely differently. So, okay, one first question, and it comes completely straight to mind, is: wait a second, are you saying you're breaking into the infrastructures of the bad guys? That sounds very interesting.
Sounds like hacking back, doesn't it?
Oh, I see. James had to go straight there. All right, Kareem, you got to tell us.
Yeah.
You guys aren't quite doing that.
The last one in, you know, active defense. Remember that one?
Oh my gosh! Yes.
So yeah. So no, we're not hacking. Thankfully, we wouldn't be in business too long. We certainly wouldn't be able to be invested in, and it would be hard to even maintain any kind of semblance of longevity there. However, on that note, we are very aggressively identifying attributing as best we can with high confidence the infrastructure of these groups. And then with the aid of very unique relationships we've established over the years, we're able to deliver that evidence of maliciousness to them, and then they can alter based on their mandates and their terms of service that they have set up. These are providers. These are registrars, providers. They can alter the infrastructure to work for us, and we're able to then collect telemetry based on their changes.
So I apologize for making this comparison ahead of time, but this is not like the Norse model, is it?
No, we're not creating PQ maps with regurgitated data from DShield or something, whatever they did. Not at all. So this is actual telemetry we're collecting from the malware that is out there proliferated in the community. And so we're watching the beacons back. In fact, if we have time, it'd be cool to talk about some of the more recent stuff with like UNC 1868 and the TrickBot stuff, which is really interesting.
definitely want to get I'll let you kind of get into that, because that's always fascinating to hear what the latest and greatest badness that the bad guys are doing. But I'm actually super curious on, okay, because the concept sounds interesting, right? So you want to figure out where the bad guys are. That's step one. Mm-hmm. Figuring out where they're launching their attacks from, where their CNC systems are, etc. And then basically going and watching that traffic. Is that, and then seeing, matching that back to like IP blocks and assets of customers?
Yep. The second half is absolutely correct. So we're doing our best to try to, that's actually some of the hardest part of the business, is really identifying whose IP belongs to whom, especially with cloud now, right? Nothing's really as clear anymore.
It's all Amazon.
But you know, now it's even worse. But yeah, so the first part is correct. We do identify the C2 infrastructure based on two or three ways. I'll really quickly run through them. So we either look through open source intel, really, believe it or not, it's amazing these days. There's an immense amount of malware analysis going on compared to 10 years ago that people are just broadly flagrantly sharing outbound. You know, you can find a ton of data. And then we'll pivot off that to figure out other C2 infrastructure that's maybe more latent and dormant. Okay. So unlike 10 years ago, when we were looking for like a C2 environment that was jettisoned or relinquished by the adversary because they figured it was already had or it's been listed too many times, we're looking for things that are living and very much used. And the one piece I would change from what you said is, instead of watching passively and listening and kind of man in the middling them, which is more like a NetFlow, you know, like Cymry guys do a great job of that. You know, they're doing a lot of analysis. Love those guys. We're great friends. But what we're doing is we're more like men at the terminus. We're actually there at the C2 watching the endpoint.
Huh.
Yeah.
And I have to ask them, what's the legality behind that? Because how do you?
Very, very reasonable questions. I feel like I'm in due diligence. It's awesome. It is very legal. The reason it is because the collection is going to infrastructure that the provider has afforded, you know, that registrant.
Okay.
And if that provider decides to alter who, you know, just like if they pointed the C2 to a parked page, for example, or a suspend page.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes, we're basically that. So that's the thing. We're able to get away with this pretty, and we're not going into an organization's environment. You know, we're not deploying an agent to our earlier conversation, which would really put this in a weird place. If we were collecting intel from an agent that's installed in a location, we'd be really in an interesting bind. But because the intel and any kind of PII, well, I should be clear, any kind of telemetry we're seeing leave this organization is collected completely on the outside of their perimeter. So we're all in the clear.
That's cool. So that's, I mean, that's a, if the, I think if the sort of matching of signal to, you know, to the indicator, to the victim is with enough confidence, that's a great way of getting people past the, oh no, I'm compromised by 74 different pieces of malware. Which one of them matter?
Right. Right. Absolutely. We can rank by severity. We can rank by, and you know, as we'll get into in the conversation, you know, I kind of come from the Mandiant sort of style of belief, which is you got to separate the weapon from the actor, from the campaign. They're not all just lumped together. It's not all about APTs using O'Day, right? That's not what happens. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, commodity malware like ToneDef being leveraged by APT34. And so when we're talking to organizations either that are victimized or ones that are working closely with victimized organizations, we'll say, look, this is a commodity piece of malware. However, it's being leveraged by a nation state actor. So that's why you should be worried. Not so much that you're dealing with this extremely malicious binary. It's because the actor that is behind it is particularly nefarious. Right, well, so that's a pretty unique way to say it.
Yeah. It's a two-part question. What's the data volume that you guys have to sift through? And then part two of that is, how the hell do you do it? Is it algorithms and filtered to humans, or like kind of what's the
ML and AI, Raph? That's all you need to know. ML and AI.
Man, I'll tell you know how many times I've like blown people away by not saying that that's the answer, because people are so expecting that. You're so right. But believe it or not, so it is programmatic. We do have a very assembly line process that we have to do this, right? So once something is identified as a command and control infrastructure that we can pursue, it literally goes into a hopper effectively, and it gets executed. There's no manual intervention there. Where there is manual intervention is usually malware that just won't detonate in a sandbox of some kind, whether it's custom or you know, a commodity one. That we have to pull apart and reverse engineer. Now that's the only manual part of our business. The rest of it is completely just influx of data, and we don't have to sift through it, to be honest, Raf, which is pretty interesting, because by definition, what we're seeing is simply the malware communication back to C2. We're not looking at all the net flow. We're not looking
at traffic. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So everything you have is signal. There's no noise.
That's right. So we're basically starting with known bad. We're just trying to rank severity of what it is and what and like what you should worry about, to your point.
That's interesting. Okay, because that actually does that does significantly reduce the amount of, because there's no. But there's no false positives here. You know, this is a C2 server. It's beaconing out to 1,000, 1,000,000, 100,000,000, whatever endpoints. You know, those are all talking back, right? I wonder if they're infected. The answer is yes, they are.
Yep. Where we have, you know, I would call it really maybe a false negative rather than perhaps a false positive, is if it is indeed a researcher that is detonating malware and it's coming out of an IP address that belongs to a company. That may show up. However, this is the only part where we use algorithms to try to look at 180 days. And if there's constant sort of patterning, either it'll look very much like malware that's trying to evade detection, which is pretty easy to see, which is cool, right? Because it looks like it's ducking and weaving and hiding, and the dorsal fin's going underwater, then it's coming back up, and then, you know, it's pretty obvious. And if it's a sandbox environment or it's a researcher group, usually it's like a new flavor every week that's showing up in our system, right? So we're like, that's just someone testing. But when something's there consistently for like 180 days, it's like, yeah, that's a persistent piece of malware that's infecting someone. That's not a sandbox running.
Interesting. What kind of stuff do you uncover? Is it one of the things that we keep hearing is that the time to discovery or what's the metric that my old company used to use?
Dwell time.
The dwell time. That's right. Yeah. Are you seeing dwell time? What's the average that you guys? I'm sure you've got a metric like that somewhere.
We do, and you know, it's probably taken from some other groups that have done the research. Really, we pride ourselves on reducing it, right? Obviously, because if we can. So good example, good segue into some of the more recent stuff that happened. We saw beacons come about from a specific loader that was tied to the TrickBot stuff, right? And it was really low and slow. I mean, we're talking like one or two beacons. Effectively, nothing that probably an on-prem solution would really be able to identify unless they knew what they were looking for, right?
That's a trick.
Yeah, it's hard because you're basically saying, well, you know, if you're looking for a baseline or some sort of patterning, it's not going to show up because it's just too low. Quantity wise. And so we were able to see that. And then we watched another iteration or another infection manifest from the next stage of that type of campaign. So we could watch a campaign manifest over stages. And then we're like, wow, this thing's imminently heading toward a ransomware deployment of some kind. They're about to drop the encryption payload here in a minute. And lo and behold, they went, the whole organization went silent, and they showed up in the news about a week and a half later. So it's morbid to watch. Now, our problem, and you asked a little bit earlier what the volume is, we see about 1 billion beacons a day.
Yikes.
It's expensive to maintain. meaning, you know, there's a lot of IO, there's a lot of really massive amounts of effort and maintenance to keep a DB running smoothly, especially considering we built a search engine for people to sort of sift through and look for organizations and IPs that are compromised.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So dwell time. Sadly, we're not big enough as a company, you know, and proliferated enough to really have dented that. It's still like in the 200 and something day time frame, honestly, on average. I mean, that really depends on the threat. But what's really cool is that we've been able to bring it down from effectively days to a matter of minutes, because we can hand them the telemetry that we were talking about to match up to their internal tools, and they can zero in on exactly what machine is hosted or is compromised, and they can remediate. So
that's a that's a super interesting model, because if nothing else, you're very rarely alerting somebody on hey, this might be, you're like, no, this is 100% guaranteed. How right. how receptive I guess you have to get somebody, so like the getting somebody to sign up for a service like this, I guess they have to care first, right?
Yeah, you're right. So it's interesting. So with Prevalian, unlike my last company, which was explicitly focused on calling the victim, right? And unfortunately, there's a term for that in the industry, which is ambulance chasing, right?
Yeah.
So fortunately, that was well-intentioned, but it was a really hard business model, because you are dealing with people that are not happy. They do not want to hear the information you have to share. They've got enough problems. You're bringing more to the table. So with Prevalian, what's interesting is it originally was born to deliver partner ecosystem information to them. So you are, I'm not talking to you, Raf, about you. I'm talking about all your friends that you go to lunch with, and you need to basically stay away from them for a few weeks because they all have COVID. So that's really what I'm saying. And now that's not fun to hear, because you don't want to necessarily change your way you deal with your friends, and sometimes you really enjoy this. But if it's a difference between you getting ill and not, you'll probably take that advice. So people have been very receptive to that. Believe it or not, the real use cases that have come from that were ones I would never have guessed. So, for example, M&A is a massive one that people use this for. They can determine whether a company is worthwhile to buy or whatever. So they'll do some testing there. They use our data for due diligence purposes. They'll change deal terms with our data. I mean, shave off millions of dollars, to the deal price and be like, fix it, or we're taking the money off. They use it to test security infrastructure that's already been purchased. So all of the on-prem stuff are, if we see it, it's not working, right? bottom line, if it's made it outside the perimeter of the organization and all of your on-prem and proxy data, scrubbing tools and all that, well, then obviously none of that worked despite your investment. And then another really interesting use case is starting to emerge is insurance, because it's bi-directional there. The insurance holders can use our data to file claims, and insurance companies are freaked out by that, because we can prove that there was indeed a compromise and evidence of compromise in their environment. And then insurance companies use it to actually create the policies.
Okay, but hold on. So that's sure. interesting. Yeah. So two things that as you were talking, I didn't want to interrupt you. But so we've seen repeatedly that some of these cyber policies explicitly, won't pay out if it's like, what do they call it, an act of war or a nation state attack or something, yeah. right? So basically yeah. what you're saying is, let me show you all the ways that you can't get reimbursed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really, the data is a dream for both sides, because for the ones, you're right, if it's a situation where an organization has done everything in their power to defend themselves, but a sophisticated cyber crime group like TA-505 has gotten in there and done some damage, insurance companies have to play ball. I mean, I'm not an insurance, underwriter or actuarial person, but the good news is they can take that and it's true evidence. It's here's what happened. This is what we did. We had all the security in place. It still happened. You're my last line of defense. Insurance pay. The insurance companies, on the other hand, can take our data and they can say, this is a really risky proposition to give a policy to. This is a great, good driver discount person. Blah, 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 blah. You go back and forth.
Is it possible also for an insurance company, with the data that you provide, to be able to come back and say, based on what we got, we know you didn't do X, Y, and Z internally? Because, I mean, you obviously should be able to say, look, this endpoint or this protection would have stopped this from happening. They obviously don't have that deployed.
100%, because most of the time the malware we're seeing has this AV signature associated that you could have downloaded and gotten rid of it many times. If it's really commodity stuff, it's usually pretty easy to get rid of many times. Other stuff's not, but you're right. So if you're like, hey, why were you infected with this? If you told me you've got these endpoint AV agents and they're being updated, well, then why didn't it, deal with it?
At what point do you have enough information to be able to fingerprint software inside an organization based on what triggers and what doesn't, right? Like, sure. I mean, remember the days when you could fingerprint web servers and all that just by how response headers come back? Like, if I can look from your endpoints and see that this malware exploded and this one didn't and this one did, well, you're definitely running this internally.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So this is a really good segue. So our data comes in sort of two flavors or iterations. The first is the DNS traffic, right? Which is fairly low fidelity, to be honest with you. We're only seeing the beacon exfil, you know, communication to C2. It doesn't have any meta typically. Typically, there's a story here. So there's not really any good meta to work with. You're not able to see endpoint or workstation information, no MAC addresses, no, you know, nothing really. Now there is another step in this. And this is going to even fry your noodle more on the legality of this, but work with me here. So there's the DNS call by malware to C2 infrastructure, right? That's great. That's easy. That's passive. That's just one directional. We reply with like a null, you know, quad zero answer. We never really answer. We have the option to answer legally and give it an ephemeral IP to talk to, which is us. What that affords us then is full layer 7 connectivity, TCP handshaking with malware, getting things like workstation names to your point, right? And now we're saying, yes, Martha underscore Macintosh, you know, in accounting department is the one with the problem. And she's running, you know, this version of Big Sur or, you know, whatever example that is. Usually it's a Windows machine. So that is very, very possible. Now, the funny story, and I won't dwell on this because I'd allow you guys to sort of think on that one. The TrickBot stuff, the Anchor DNS stuff was really interesting because they were collecting recon on the environments by getting the DNS queries to encrypt the workstation information in it. So they were transferring actual recon information to the C2 through DNS.
Which is not part of the DNS version.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was encrypted, but once you break the encryption, you got all these host names to look at, these workstation names, which is pretty scary.
That's innovation.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay, something else that kind of came up as you guys were talking. You said you could use this for M&A activity and all that. Mm-hmm. My brain is trying to wrestle with the legalities behind me looking up another company's.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to go do business with somebody, Acme Widget Corp, I'm going to go look them up in your system and be like, oh, man, these guys are seriously compromised. Yeah. I don't know if I want to do business with them. I guess it's public knowledge.
How different is that from like scorecard? Like, yeah, you know, like all these scorecard things.
I was just about to say that. So get this, scorecard companies actively scan these organizations, pounding on their attack surface without their permission most of the time, and then deliver a report to these people. We are simply relaxing and waiting for the call from the malware to call us. We didn't call them, they called us. So we're even less invasive than scorecard companies are. Wow. But more relevant and more visceral.
Yeah, some of those scorecard orgs are cute, but like, no.
Yeah.
No. So many
they get the attack surface wrong anyway. So.
Well, that's the problem, right? Every single one of them gets the attacks, and I can't tell you how many times I've had customers go, "You guys have all this malware." I'm like, "Yeah, none of those IPs are ours."
Exactly, it's exactly right. Yeah, so it's exactly the point, which is interesting. Even though what we're collecting effectively is more critical and needed by a due diligence team to know, because frankly, it's showing systemic success or failure of the org, right, over time, not their vulnerability, which you can, if you did a really good concerted effort, you could get them cleaned up and you could get the vulnerability just squared away, but you can't, it's kind of like Yelp or TripAdvisor. You can't just go change the restaurant's rating overnight if they've had bad ratings for an entire year. And that's kind of what we're looking at. We're saying you've been compromised consistently for 180 days per our UI. We probably have a year's worth of data in our system that we could, you know, divulge. But you're telling me that everything's fine now? You've magically fixed everything after a year of complete, you know, dwell time, as we put it earlier, of this malware?
Yeah. Well, no. And there's no, like the only things you're going to see are things that are compromised. So it's not like I could go say, hey, right. go look up this company, you know, tell me you haven't seen anything from them. Like only things that have had something are going to show up. What's the timeline in which once somebody shows up, they do drop off if they stop beaconing, you know, like, yeah. oh, I fixed a problem. I'm gone. Yeah. 2 years from now, if somebody came in and said, hey, I'm looking to do business with XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to pull back and say, oh, 2 years ago they had a comp, you know, they had malware.
Yeah.
Or is there at a certain point where that drops off, or do you keep that line chart?
It does drop off in from a visual standpoint in the UI where we say, okay, if you've been, because to be honest with you, we praise and think companies that show this like sort of cardiac heartbeat look, which is that huge amounts of compromise then drop off indicates remediation's happened and they've done a good job. So we think those guys are pretty cool. Like this is not about trying to find someone that's flatlined constantly. It's rare to find anyone like that. Because usually something gets in and they deal with it, right? So to your point, yes, we could treat this very much like a credit bureau to sort of say, yeah, 2 years ago you did have this skirmish with DrovaRub from APT28. It looks like you dealt with it really fast and really well. Congratulations, but you did have this. It's on record. Yeah, so you know, and if someone wants to make a decision based on that information, frankly, it could actually improve the decision. They could say, well, you know what, this is a really sophisticated group. They've been targeted heavily by a nation state actor or a very sophisticated cybercrime group, but they dealt with it well. So it's not always a negative assertion story.
It's interesting, Raf, to think about, you know, like Sean's take on something like this, where you say, okay, I'm company X and I've never reported any type of incident anywhere, yeah. but this is captured someplace that yes, I had malware in my systems
and it was exfilling.
You know what I mean? Like what happens when the government comes knocking and says, hey, look, we want information on this company because, you know, we've heard rumor or we're under some under investigation with them and we want to go see, and they go back and look and say, you know, I mean, think about Uber with, hey, I see 2 years ago when we're in the midst of an investigation, you had a huge malware infestation. Yeah. That's going to be a problem for us. And it's not reported anywhere.
James, I'm less worried about the FBI. I'm more worried about the FTC.
The SEC. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. You know, like at what point do they go? Because you had mentioned earlier that there's like a search engine for this stuff. Is that for customers only? Like, can anybody go do this like Shahoku or, you know, something like that? Or do you have to be a customer to be able to search these things? It's, you know, be interesting to go look up like, oh, let me see if this company's had any issues.
Yeah. So when we started, it was we were a little more policing of the data for all the reasons you mentioned. Right. So it's not just such a free for all because it gets to be a little bit, you know, chaotic and crazy. And we also wanted to, but, you know, for us as Prevalian, we also don't want to police it, right? Because it gets very complicated. So, what's going to happen now? So timing is everything, right? We actually did build a bulk export capability primarily because of government interest in this regard, right? They want to be able to say, well, a couple things. They want to be able to see vast amounts of IP space. They want to see countries at scale. They want to look at regions or total industries, for example. So we deliver that on a regular basis and they can sift through it behind their firewall and not worry about us peeking at what they're looking at. That's the same for anyone else that wants to get it. So an insurance company could basically say, we're going to create a cyber policy for specifically, you know, oil and gas, for example. So they can get the entire oil and gas industry to look at over a period of time and then make a really informed judgment because they need statistical information to derive their policies. They can't look at the onesie twosies that are unique. Yeah, they need to have a baseline. But yeah, so, hey, if the SEC is watching this and they give us a call and they go, hey, can we have a subscription to the entire thing? And, or should we just buy Prevalian and watch everything from afar? Yeah, that's possible.
You'll be both loved and hated in the same breath. Oh,
like a new watchdog group, you know, like I'm just, you know, looking to be a whistleblower here.
Right.
Report as much as I can.
All right. Yeah, well, before we run out of time, I want to hear about some of the more interesting things you guys have seen. One question first. Is it more interesting or more mundane data that you guys see? Is it more like because everybody says, you know, like you just said, the APTs aren't necessarily blowing zero day on everybody, right? Sure. Is the adage that we've had in the industry hold true that for the most part it's all commodity crap that you're getting whacked with because missing the basics. Ducks.
Yeah. Even worse, it's living off the land. You know, that old term. I mean, it's sadly not even commodity. It's not. It's like it's tools. Like it's Cobalt Strike has shown up again with the trick pot stuff, right? Like, come on.
Yeah.
How long are we gonna deal with this? And then the source code just got released. I don't know if you guys saw that, like allegedly.
Yeah, I heard
a week ago or something. Yeah, so good question. It's a little bit of both. I think what's most shocking is the fact that malware that probably I thought was extinct is totally alive and well out there.
Lovely.
Yeah, I mean, when we kicked this thing off, I went just in the MVP of the product back in late 2017, early 18. I had old, historical stuff I knew about from research, and I was like, well, I guess I could just start there and see if I get a trickle, right, of a few orgs that are still, machines running, they've forgotten about, whatever. I assumed there would be something to look at. I was deluged. It crashed the little EC2 thing that I had running initially, right? And it was a Romnit domain, no less. Romnit. Oh. This is like something that I think circa 2011 or something, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was
a long time ago.
Absolutely fine. And then, believe it or not, when the whole COVID thing kicked off, we have a couple theories around this, so this might be interesting to tell you guys. It exploded. And this is, again, Romnit. This is something that now what's funny about Romnit is that it's a silly old malware. People laugh at it. I do, too, because it's so old. But that stuff was built like solidly. It was like a Model T back then. Right. Because this thing can live on the master boot record of a machine, which they don't do much anymore. That's just not in fashion. But that's a pretty resilient and, strong way to maintain persistence in something. So we watch these things come online, and the theory we have is that with the whole crazy COVID mess and work from home, people started to hand out laptops left and right that were probably in cold storage, and they probably were infected, and they're old, and they probably just handed them over to these people. They went home, they turned them on, and blap, there's Romnit first installed.
Millions of Windows XP machines suddenly come back to life.
Yeah. So that's one really interesting, really semi-mundane, but kind of shocking story, right? Because it's like, geez, that's still alive,
But does that make it harder? Does that make it harder to attribute the organization that's a part of, though? Because with everybody working from home, you're not coming from an organization's IP address unless they're VPNing through.
That's a good point.
That's right. No, it is hard. And if they are VPNing, we're still seeing the exfil come from the org, obviously, right? But what's really terrifying, and that's actually perfect segue to what we did see, we saw that was a new attack surface for the adversary that they loved, right? Because they could use the VPN as a hypodermic needle into the org. They literally used it to their advantage. It was perfect for them because they could just go infect an Xbox somewhere and then bounce into a corporate laptop and off they go, right? So we were seeing a bunch of Comcast IPs or whatever, not Comcast being residential, right?
Probably Comcast.
Right, but then a huge explosion out of these orgs that were otherwise totally, getting compromised by way of these home users. It's still happening. That hasn't slowed down at all.
Yeah.
The other stuff that's probably pretty scary was this convergence of what looks like crimeware groups that are, syndicating their, leasing their plumbing, as I call it, right? That's come back into fashion again. So these huge botnet operators are leveraging their access to these ransomware groups. What I was mentioning about. Yeah, exactly. The one that I know we're running out of time, but this is a good one. It looks like we stumbled across this like very, very common trifecta attack, which was heavily Russian in origin. They would come in and they would infect with an initial Trojan. They would harvest PII and IP as best they could find it. Then they'd move to crypto mining when the cryptocurrency markets were high, right? So they could make some good money while the numbers were good. The minute the crypto markets would dip, they would shift TTPs to ransomware and then go to a third stage of the whole thing of like ransack and leave. So they would do this like three-stage effort, harvest, mine, and then ransom. And it seems to be consistently happening over and over again now. So that was pretty shocking.
That's it. man, that's it. Innovation in bad guys. I hate it, but
I know.
Damn, they're good.
I know. It's,
yeah. So what is the craziest thing you've seen in terms of some of the exotic stuff out there? I mean, this is a good example, but
yeah. It's funny. Watching the experiments are funny. I got one for you. This will probably be the funniest. My favorite part, and this goes back to like good old school Intel gathering heritage, which is at some point or other in history, they're going to make that mistake, right? And they'll just not think about OPSEC. They'll think about OPSEC once they're successful, right? Now it's start like layering up and proxy and VPN everywhere and everything else, and you know, fresh VPN for every call we ever make to anything. The coolest thing I think we ever did was we were able to irritate, we'll call it that, we'll leave it at that, the DNS infrastructure of this group, to where we got them to log in and see what was wrong. And we got them at a moment where I guess they just were lazy and they came in from their own IP.
Oh.
So we're able to find the physical location of the actual actor in this case. And it didn't match any IPs for the last year that we were watching them, but it did match one IP from the inception of the infrastructure that we saw. So we finally got a link a year later between one IP in the beginning and the end. So we were able to really attribute it back to the same group or same indicator. And so that was pretty killer because we now had, and then we were able to unravel all of their other infrastructure that was latent and it was everywhere. And so we had all the space that we were in, and the experiment, just to leave it at that, were all kinds of things. They were using walled garden environments like Twitter and Slack, and they're using Emmer DNS, which is like a blockchain DNS tool, to see if they could like hide their DNS communications, you know, all the usual stuff, Tor. I mean, that's all kind of had now.
I feel like that example is sort of like that. We saw this on reported a couple of years ago where you had a terrorist cell and, you know, they were communicating mm-hmm. covertly and using encryption. And then the one guy decides that he's going to get on Twitter, forgets to turn off location, and suddenly like inbound, wave hello and goodbye.
There it is. That's it. That's exactly right. Yeah. When Will and I talk, you know, you obviously know Will. Will and I talk a lot about the parallels between what they were seeing at NetWitness and what we see today at Prevalion. And there's amazing parallels.
That was an org.
Right.
And that's awesome. You guys, that's solving some really cool, like problems, because I think it's really easy to quote a recent television commercial, to go nose blind to your own organization, right? As long as the problem doesn't physically like blow up or hurt you in some way or decrease your productivity or whatever, you're going to go,
Yeah.
Right. True. And it's like, I'm not seeing it, because there's a lot of great security tools layered upon layered upon layered. And like using encrypted DNS, like, okay, well.
Yeah, right.
It's
no doubt. And I mean, you know, I know this word's overused now, especially unfortunately, but when we started, the whole idea of figuring out the epidemiology of malware was the plan, right? I'm kind of reluctant to use that term now because everyone's like, oh, you're just, you know, riding on the epidemic. It's like, well, I kind of started this before there was ever COVID uttered. but yeah, it is interesting because we can see the proliferation and the island hopping of this malware from one org to another. And it's pretty scary. I mean, it really does. This stuff's built to laterally move like that. And so, yeah, it's airborne. All right.
I you know, it's amazing. And I will leave it at this, but I think it's amazing that I think most of us that don't live in it every day like you will struggle to understand quite the sophistication and the capabilities built into some of this. Because the last time I disassembled malware, I used disassembled, was, I don't know, 2002, 2003, right? When you could pull the hex editor or you know, like look at a Perl script and see what it was doing.
Right.
This is not that anymore.
Yeah.
There's some sophisticated stuff out there that rivals some of the good guy code.
And, no doubt. And better. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And what's worse is they're using good guy code. Like, that's the worst part. And so it's hard to differentiate between what looks like a conventional tool that is meant to be used by an administrator versus it being used by a malware that's now gained privilege to do so, right? So pretty bad.
Yikes. All right. So spelled Prevailion.
It's Prevailion.
How did you get that name?
Funny story. So that was a domain I bought like 1,000 years ago. I think I bought it in the early 2000s for something completely different. I'm trying to remember even what it was for. And when I started the project in 17, I just went to like my list because I was like, I need to get, you know, when you think about getting started these days, getting a decent domain and all that's pretty tough, right? You know, you got to figure out what you're going to call your company. And I was running through the list and I'm like, you know, that's kind of cool because I had this like mantra of helping organizations prevail.
Yeah.
And that was my original idea. And then I, lo and behold, I have, like serendipitously saw the domain I had from a long time ago. I'm like, perfect, that's it. And so believe it or not, it was in the making from like 1999, you know, I bought the domain or something. And so nice. I got the domain and I was able to spin off that. And it's been awesome. It's been a perfect term for it. For all of our product lines that we keep coming out with, it keeps resonating really well.
That's awesome. Well, I wish you guys continued growth because that sounds like, man, that sounds like some fun work though. That'd be a fun job to have. Like, oh, what are you doing today? Sneaking up on bad guys.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, you know, it's kind of cool because the net of this is we actually make this more painful and expensive for them to do. So we make them have to deal with the same problems we all do, which is their OPSEC has to be pretty decent to avoid us. So we finally a little bit of heartache there and make it more expensive, which is probably the ultimate solution. More the minute it becomes too expensive to do, they'll stop.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate idea, right? We're never going to make bad people stop doing bad things,
right?
But maybe we can make it so expensive that we can take out some of the, make it, have them do something, force them to do something, go back to the physical world. I don't know, maybe.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's too lucrative right
now. What is the
cost? Yeah. Great point.
All right, Karim Ajazi, thank you, sir. That was kind of educational and a lot of fun.
It was my pleasure.
Fun conversation. James, anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, this is definitely something I want to go check out, right? Because, I mean, it's interesting. You don't know something like this even exists. And, now you want to learn more about it for sure.
Yeah, I you guys should have like a portal. Somebody can just log into and go, how bad is my company?
it's actually been considered, believe it or not. You're like, all right, what do we share, right? How much would we redact right there? Because it could get pretty crazy pretty quick. But yeah, it's absolutely possible.
It's like that freemium model. Like first taste is free. I'll tell you, do you have 17 compromised assets? Here's the first two.
Yeah.
This glass we door all of a sudden. You get 5 results and then you have to be a member.
I know, really get them freaked out. But the cool part is we actually do have a freemium model at the moment, which companies can come and get their own telemetry for free. So we remove the whole like extortive ambulance chasing play completely. We're like, if you are the company with the problem, you're welcome to get an account for yourself to get it for free. We're not trying to charge people for their own problems, which is kind of cool.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go check us out. Folks, if you're listening, I recommend you go in and check this out because you may be surprised as to how awesome your security is not, or you may be not surprised at all, frankly.
Right.
All right, cool. All right, Karim, thanks so much for hanging out with us. How do people get a hold of you if they want to ask questions or follow up a conversation?
Yeah, website, prevailion.com. Again, that's prevailion.com. And that's probably the best means to get a hold of me. Certainly, we do have the means to get a free account, as I mentioned just at the very end, and that does help you kind of figure out what you might be dealing with yourself. But yeah, happy to help, and we'll keep doing some pretty heavy marketing here in the next little while. Some serious things to disclose, so stay tuned.
Well, I'm wishing you guys lots of luck because this is pretty cool. I think there's certainly a market for it, and man. That is some exciting stuff. All right, folks, thanks for listening. This has been yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. I know I learned a lot, and hopefully you guys go check out Prevailion's wares on your own org. And I wish that you find nothing. I suspect I'm going to be wrong.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And on that note, thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys another time, another place on yet another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Ciao, y'all.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Our website is whiterabbit.net, whiterabbit.net. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.